Three.
So, excuse me, we're on step five today, and oh, there's a long, another long introduction on page six. So let's go there first. Give everybody a chance to get there. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 12 steps deflate ego. Step five is difficult but necessary to sobriety and peace of mind. Confession is an ancient discipline. Without fearless admission of defects, few could stay sober. What do we receive from step five? Beginning of true kinship with man and God. Excuse me, lose sense of isolation, receive forgiveness and give it. Learn humility, gain honesty and realism about ourselves. Necessity for complete honesty. Danger of rationalization. How to choose the person in whom to confide. Results are tranquility and consciousness of God, oneness with God and man. Prepares us for following steps. Amen. All right, now we're going to flip over to page 55, and I want to say something that includes step five before we get into the essay. And that is that our book does not tell us, and this was something I discovered early on, does not tell us explicitly what to share at a public level and what to share at a more private level, but it does implicitly, it implies. So in chapter five in the big book where we read, it says, our stories disclose, and of course they're talking about the stories in the back of the book, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. Now that's at a public level, right? Because they know anybody in the world can buy the AA book and read it. And so at the public level, and that can even include a full meeting, even a women's, a stag meeting, whether it's all women or all men. And so that's where we tell story, because in order to allow ourselves as we recover to have some human dignity. So then here in step five, it tells us where we give all the gory, juicy details. One person. That one person can be divided up. You can give your inventories to one person, your resentments to somebody else, your fears to some. I mean, there's all kinds of people can choose a minister or rabbi or priest. For some, they can choose their doctor or their psychiatrist. They can choose their sponsor, of course. That's traditional, but believe me, it's not carved in stone that you have to give your fifth step to your sponsor. And in this book, I believe it's in this one, it even mentions it's for some people. Hi, Mary. For some people, we're on page 55. We're starting, but I'm giving a little story about this. For some people, a complete stranger is a good vote. So who we choose, whether we divide it up or give it all to one person, but that's where we tell everything. And so a perfect example of that, I have a perfect example in my life that I can always use. So I did some very, very, very wrong things in my life, some of them even in early sobriety. I gave them to my sponsor. If she's alive, they'll remain with her. If she's dead, they have gone to their grave with her, gone to her grave with her. And all I'll tell you is that what I just said, I did some very, very wrong, immoral things in my life. I will never confirm or deny if somebody says, oh, of course people's brains are going to go different places. You're entitled for your brain to go wherever it wants to. But if you say, oh, did you mean dot, the dot when you said that? I will never say yes or no. I will just look at you and smile sweetly. You will never know. No one, my sponsees, nobody, that one person, my sponsor, is the one who knows about that stuff. See, and I get to allow myself I mean, I am a person who does allow myself to have a little of what I call holy humility by letting people see my clutter as much as is showing. But that kind of stuff, I allow myself a little bit of human dignity that I haven't done those things for years. I don't do them anymore. Decades, really. I don't do them anymore. And that's all you need to know. Okay, so there's a perfect example. So I like to say that about step five. It does tell us exactly who, the category of who, to tell all our gory, juicy details. All right, step five, page 55. I'll read the step again. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. All of AA's 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. That's right. Staying sober is a life that's against our alcoholic nature, because the most natural thing for an alcoholic is to be drunk and drinking. That's not, so we're going against nature just with that. The spiritual life is also very much against human nature. Selfishness, self-centeredness, and self-focus is our natural state. Have you ever noticed nobody has to treat a little baby how to be selfish? We just come into the world being that way, thinking about ourselves, right? Contemplating ourselves. So the spiritual life is a life against human nature. So we have a double challenge on our hands as alcoholics, because we're doing a sober life against our alcoholic nature and trying to do a spiritual life against our human nature. That's why it's a constant battle, right? We're really dealing with all kinds of things all the time. So let me start that again. This is a good first sentence. All of AA's 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than five. But scarcely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one. AA experience has taught us we cannot live alone with our pressing problems and the character defects which cause or aggravate them. If we have swept the searchlight of step four back and forth over our careers, and it has revealed in stark relief those experiences we'd rather not remember, if we have come to know how wrong thinking and action have hurt us and others, then the need to quit living by ourselves with those tormenting ghosts of yesterday gets more urgent than ever. We have to talk to somebody about them. Absolutely. And of course, for me, that's what I love about AA, is because I can come here and talk about my crazy brain and the things it makes me think of doing and sometimes actually doing still, you know. And you guys know, you not only don't judge me in a negative way, but you know, because you're there too, you know. I think that's one of my favorite things about the program, is that I'm home. I absolutely am home here. Yes, amen. So intense, though, is our fear and reluctance to do this that many AAs at first try to bypass step five. If they get through step four, oh no, here comes step five. We search for an easier way, which usually consists of the general and fairly painless admission that when drinking, we were sometimes bad actors. Then, for good measure, we add dramatic descriptions of that part of our drinking behavior, which our friends probably know about anyhow. But of the things which really bother and burn us, we say nothing. Certain distressing or humiliating memories, we tell ourselves, ought not be shared with anyone. These will remain our secret. Not a soul must ever know. We hope they'll go to the grave with us. Yet if AA's experience means anything at all, this is not only unwise, but is actually a perilous resolve. Few muddled attitudes have caused us more trouble than holding back on step five. Some people are unable to stay sober at all. Others will relapse periodically until they really clean house. Yes, so this is a part of cleaning house. Doing the inventory is only the first half of cleaning. Actually, it's actually the first of several and several aspects and portions of cleaning house. Cleaning house is steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So it's there's 6 parts to cleaning house. We can't stop in the middle and say we're done. Yes, yes, yes. And then, of course, like any good home, once we've cleaned it, we have to work at keeping it clean, right? And sometimes go back in and do some spring cleaning, deep dive forts. They, I'm sure not everybody has to do them up into the number of years I'm sober, but some of us do, and I'm one of them, and I don't mind. Okay. Even AA old timers, sober for years, often pay dearly for skimping this step. They will tell how they tried to carry the load alone, how much they suffered of irritability, anxiety, remorse, and depression, and how, unconsciously seeking relief, they would sometimes accuse even their best friends of the very character defects they knew that they themselves were trying to conceal. Yes, 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 yes. And you notice the description of what he describes here that they suffer. Let's go back and look at those again. Irritability, anxiety, remorse, and depression, all feelings. Here we go with the feelings again, right? And feelings make us crazy sometimes. They always discovered that relief never came by confessing the sins of other people. Everybody had to confess his own. Now I have this next paragraph circled and some of the sections within it also circled. This practice of admitting one's defects to another person is, of course, very ancient. It has been validated in every century, and it characterizes the lives of all spiritually centered and truly religious people. But today, religion is by no means the sole advocate of this saving principle. Now, this next section is double circled here. Psychiatrists and psychologists point out the deep need every human being has for practical insight and knowledge of his own personality flaws. And then again, double and triple circled. And for a discussion, the word discussion, of them with an understanding and trustworthy person. So good sponsoring means when you're the ones chosen to listen to a fifth step, you often listen and ask questions and share your own experiences to help the person who's, especially if it's their first time doing a fifth step, to help them feel at home, like, oh yeah, if I did it, or I thought about it, or for sure I've at least heard it from somebody. No surprises here, to make them feel at home and feel comfortable. Hi, Bubs. We are studying step 5. We are right now on page 36, near the bottom. So if you want to, in the 12 and 12. All right. So go moving on. We're in 1, 2, 3, 4, starting near the end of the fourth sentence from the bottom. So far as alcoholics are concerned, AA would go even further. Most of us would declare that without a fearless admission of our defects to another human being, we could not stay sober. It seems plain that the grace of God will not enter to expel our destructive obsessions until we are willing to try this. Very, very important. What are we likely to receive from step 5? For one thing, we shall get rid of that terrible sense of isolation we've always had. Almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. Even before our drinking got bad and people began to cut us off, nearly all of us suffered the feeling that we didn't quite belong. Well, yes, I certainly identify with that. And I do want to say that this is the step. There are several steps along the way where some people have like a load off, or they have a spiritual, they have a very profound experience with this program. But not everybody has it at the same spot. And I've not particularly had one that, you know, that I would call a spiritual experience And I'm not complaining about that. Not everybody has a profound spiritual experience. Some of us are the educational variety as described in the spiritual experience in the back of the big book. And I am not complaining. I'm very grateful for my relationship with God and what it has done for me and what my relationship with him has done for me. So whatever other people have had that I haven't, I'm thrilled for them, but I do not feel cheated. Thank you very much, God. He's working in his own way in my life, and that's all that matters, right? So torture by loneliness. So the other thing I wanted to say about this, alcoholics, even before our drinking, so we, here's why, the feeling that we didn't quite belong. I had that feeling, and actually I didn't. I know I'm not alone in this, but I was one of those kids in school who was an underdog. The kids just didn't like me. I was weird. I was a weird kid. So you know how children are. If there's anything they can make fun of you for, they will do it, especially gang up and do the mob, you know? And I was just one of those kids. The only ones who became my friends in my classrooms were other people who were weird in some other way, and they were underdogs as well. So we underdogs kind of stuck together. But yeah, I understand that. And I even had it for quite a while in a lot of my early days in AA. A lot of people just didn't. You know, I'm nothing like that now. I like to call myself, I'm very wealthy. I like to call myself a female Donald Trump and a white Oprah Winfrey. I'm very wealthy too, but my wealth is not money. My wealth is in wonderful relationships. I am so blessed. So God made up for what I didn't have for years of my life. He made up for it in the later years. I will tell you that. I cannot complain about that one tiny bit. As a matter of fact, I'm very grateful. All right, so let me read that. Let me go back to the second paragraph on 57. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm starting near the end of the sixth sentence. I'll read that. I didn't stop. The one before that, excuse me. Even before our drinking got bad and people began to cut us off, nearly all of us suffered the feeling that we didn't quite belong. Either we were shy and dared not draw near others, or we were apt to be noisy good fellows, craving attention and companionship, but never getting it, at least to our way of thinking. There was always that mysterious barrier we could neither surmount nor understand. It was as if we were actors on a stage, suddenly realizing that we did not know a single line of our parts. That's one reason we loved alcohol too well. It did let us act extemporaneously. But even Bacchus boomeranged on us, we were finally struck down and left in terrified loneliness, real loneliness. When we reached AA and for the first time in our lives stood among people who seemed to understand, oh yes, the sense of belonging was tremendously exciting. We thought the isolation problem had been solved, but we soon discovered that while we weren't alone anymore in a social sense, we still suffered many of the old pangs of anxious apartness. Until we had talked with complete candor of our conflicts and had listened to someone else do the same, again, that's where the sponsor comes in and says, oh yeah, let me tell you what I did. We still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of true kinship with man and God. This vital step was also the means by which we began to get the feeling that we could be forgiven no matter what we had thought or done. Amen, amen, and amen. Often it was while working on this step with our sponsors or spiritual advisors that we first felt truly able to forgive others, no matter how deeply we felt they had wronged us. Our moral inventory had persuaded us that all-round forgiveness was desirable, but it was only when we resolutely tackled step 5 that we inwardly knew we'd be able to receive forgiveness and give it too. Yeah, and I know some form, I don't know if anybody else who's sober a little while has experienced this, but some forms of forgiveness are a lifelong process. What do I mean by that? I mean that For instance, I can think about when I shared very generally what I said about there are things I have done that none of you will ever know the details of. Now, I can think about some of those things. I don't dwell in them. I don't wallow in them. But every now and then, one or the other of them will pop back into my memory for something that triggers them. And I feel guilty again, and I have to forgive myself. So I don't mind that. I know that self-forgiveness for me can be at times an ongoing process. And I just accept that it's a part of my human brokenness. And there are times when I have to say, it's okay. You're not doing it anymore. And you don't want to do it. And so it's good. You're forgiven, you know. And also with my parents, because of the abuse, there are times when I will think about some of what they did. And again, I don't dwell or wallow in that. But when something I'm sharing with someone or something comes up and I feel anger, or extreme hurt at that, you know, an angry hurt, a self-pity about it. Again, I have to go through and forgive them and myself for my reaction to that, because I'm not trying to live that way. So forgiveness is important, but in some ways it is an ongoing process applied as needed. Hi, Stephen. Applied as needed. Do you know where we are? We are on step 5 in the 12 and 12. We're on page 58, and we're starting at the second paragraph now. So another great dividend we may expect from confiding our defects to another human being is humility. And we're going to find out more about humility a couple of steps later. Alia has had a preview of that, so she has a little idea of what I'm talking about. Something special. Anyway, a word often misunderstood. Yes. So let me start that sentence again. Another great dividend we may expect from confiding our defects to another human being is humility, a word often misunderstood. To those who have made progress in AA, it amounts to a clear recognition of what and who we really are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. And those are great expressions of how we live out humility, walk it out in our daily life. Therefore, our first practical move toward humility must consist of recognizing our deficiencies. No defect can be corrected unless we clearly see what it is. A silly example of the opposite of that is, I'm in Los Angeles. If I decide I want to take a trip to New York, I can't say, okay, I'm going to take my trip and I'll start from Las Vegas. No, I got to start from where I am, right? So we got to look at how we really are and the defects that we have to own. Hi, Sandra. And the defects that we have to own for ourselves in order to be able to correct them. Because if we ain't looking at what they are exactly as much as we're capable of looking at what they are, there is no correction, because we're going to be doing other stuff. All right. So, but we shall have to do more than see. The objective look at ourselves we achieved in step 4 was, after all, only a look. All of us saw, for example, that we lacked honesty and tolerance, that we were beset at times by attacks of self-pity or delusions of personal grandeur. But while this was a humiliating experience, it didn't necessarily mean that we had yet acquired much actual humility. Very mysterious word. Though now recognized, our defects were still there. Something had to be done about them. And we soon found out that we could not wish or will them away by ourselves. More realism, and therefore more honesty about ourselves, are the great gains we make under the influence of step 5. As we took inventory, we began to suspect how much trouble self-delusion had been causing us. This had brought a disturbing reflection. If all our lives we had more or less fooled ourselves, how could we now be so sure that we weren't still self-deceived? How could we be certain that we had made a true catalog of our defects and had really admitted them even to ourselves? Because we were still bothered by fear, self-pity, and hurt feelings, it was probable that we couldn't appraise ourselves fairly at all. Too much guilt and remorse might cause us to dramatize and exaggerate our shortcomings. Or anger and hurt pride might be the smokescreen under which we were hiding some of our defects while we blamed others for them. Possibly, too, we were still handicapped by many liabilities, great and small, we never knew we had and sometimes don't discover till after being sober a long time. There was something I wanted to say here. Hopefully it'll come back. It's senior moments gone from my mind. All right. Hence, it was most evident that a solitary self-appraisal and the admission of our defects based upon that alone wouldn't be nearly enough. We'd have to have outside help if we were surely to know and admit the truth about ourselves. The help of God and another human being. And I have this next rest of this paragraph circled again and a little bit of extra circling inside of it. Only by discussing ourselves, holding back nothing, only by being willing to take advice. Oh, I got it, take advice circled, because sometimes people want to say, oh, we don't give advice in this program. We just share our experience, strength, and hope. Yes, we do give advice. If we have advice, listen, I wouldn't be alive today if I hadn't gotten all kinds of advice that I needed from my sponsor in the early years and from the literature and from hearing people, you know, sober more than me talk and share their stories and what they do. We do have to receive advice, and we do receive it, and we do get it, and we have to receive it. So only by being willing to take advice and accept direction could we set foot on the road to straight thinking, solid honesty, and genuine humility. Really important. Yet many of us still hung back. We said, well, why can't God, as we understand him, tell us where we are astray? If the Creator gave us our lives in the first place, then he must know in every detail where we have since gone wrong. Why don't we make our admissions to him directly? Why do we need to bring anyone else into this? You know, I'll share a little bit of my personal theology because I think it's great. I believe that the Creator of the universe, because he sees everything past, present, and future like one giant picture. He's not waiting to see, oh my goodness, Shelley surprised me. She did dot, dot, dot here, you know, after 50 years of sobriety. No, I believe God knew everything that every person who was ever going to be on the face of the planet, everything we would do, say, think, or feel before he created anything. That's how big my God is. That's how I think. So there's no surprises. He knows exactly what I'm going to do tomorrow afternoon, and it's not even here yet. You know, I don't know. I don't need to know yet. But anyway, all right, that's enough to be said. So moving on. Yet many of us, I already read that. Then he must know. I mean, why do we have to bring anyone into this? So at this stage, the difficulties of trying to deal rightly with God by ourselves are twofold. Though we may at first be startled to realize that God knows all about us, we are apt to get used to that quite quickly. Somehow, being alone with God doesn't seem as embarrassing as facing up to another person. That's right. Until we actually sit down and talk aloud about what we have so long hidden, our willingness to clean house, willingness is an inner work word that shows up on the outside. Our willingness to clean house is still largely theoretical. When we are honest with another person, it confirms that we have been honest with ourselves and with God. So one of the ways we know we're honest to do something is when we see ourselves take the action, right? Always has to come down to action. Willingness, the only way, I mean, God might know I'm willing to do something. I personally don't know whether I can fool myself and say, oh yeah, I'm ready to do that. And then I do nothing, right? No, you weren't ready or you would have done it, you know? And so that's the only way I can know for sure that I'm willing to work on something that needs to be worked on is when I see myself act. actually taking the action to improve whatever parts of it I can by my own behavior. All right. So the second difficulty is this. What comes to us alone may be garbled by our own rationalization and wishful thinking. And may I throw the word justification in there too. That's part of it too. The benefit here, this is circled again in inner circle, really good stuff. The benefit of talking to another person is that we can get his direct comment and counsel on our situation. And there can be no doubt in our minds what that advice is going to, is what that advice is. Going it alone in spiritual matters is dangerous. And I used to like to say, when I was first new and I had to learn like a little kid how to make good decisions and what kinds of decisions were good and right and which were a disaster. And sometimes I'd say to people, you know, I know my sponsor's human and therefore she's not perfect, but I do know one thing. She is not going to make the stupid mistakes for my life that I do. Whatever advice she gives me is going to be better than this head will come up with, right? And so I figured it isn't going to get me in trouble, that's for sure. And we can't count on that with my brain. So, yes, she taught me well. She really did. Thank you, God. I don't always follow what I know to be right, but I know when I'm wrong. Absolutely. So, going it alone in spiritual matters is dangerous. How many times have we heard well-intentioned people claim the guidance of God when it was all too plain that they were sorely mistaken? Lacking both practice and humility, they had deluded themselves and were able to justify the most errant nonsense on the ground that this was what God had told them. It is worth noting that people of very high spiritual development almost always insist on checking with friends or spiritual advisors the guidance they feel they have received from God. Absolutely. I don't have a sponsor per se, but I do have people I respect and talk to and just share where I am. Not necessarily I'm looking for guidance, but they know that they can give me input if they have a perspective on it that's clearly not where I'm coming from, or that they will confirm, yeah, that sounds good. You know, that sounds like a good choice or a good perspective. So, yes, I always will have my people that I talk to. All right. So, surely then, a novice ought not lay himself open to the chance of making foolish, perhaps tragic blunders in this fashion. While the comment or advice of others may by no means infallible, like I said about my sponsor, it is likely to be far more specific than any direct guidance we may receive while we are still so inexperienced in establishing contact with a power greater than ourselves. Our next problem will be to discover the person in whom we are to confide. Here we ought to take much care, remembering that prudence is a virtue which carries a high rating. Perhaps, and prudence, let's look up prudence. Let's do that. I know what it means, but some words are worthy of a more official meaning. Let's see here. Come on, sweetie. I've got my... So the initial definition is the quality of being prudent. Then it says cautiousness. I think it includes wisdom. Then I like to look at the questions down below. The ability to govern and discipline oneself by the use of reason. That's a great definition. Definition two is sagacity. That's another word I'd have to look up, but I'm not going to. Sagacity or shrewdness in the management of affairs. And then definition three is skill and good judgment in the use of resources. And then it says one more question. What is an example of prudence? Prudence can also describe the skill of sidestepping trouble or embarrassment, like having the prudence to avoid risks or the prudence to prepare for the unexpected. And then it says, like packing a change of clothes in case the weather changes or your dinner reservations turn out to be at a fancy restaurant. So lots of great examples. Thank you, Google. And so now we know it's a very specific form of wisdom, actually, in the form of action and thought. Does anybody know exactly where I stopped, please?
I do, Shelley. We're on the top of page 61, starting with perhaps top paragraph, perhaps we shall need.
Got it. Thank you so much. All right. Sorry about that. Perhaps we shall need to share with this person facts about ourselves, which no others ought to know. We shall want to speak with someone who is experienced, who not only has stayed dry, but has been able to surmount other serious difficulties. Difficulties perhaps like our own. This person may turn out to be one's sponsor, but not necessarily so. If you have developed a high confidence in him and his temperament and problems are close to your own, then such a choice will be good. Besides, your sponsor already has the advantage of knowing something about your case. That's right. Perhaps, though, your relationship to him is such that you would care to reveal only a part of your story. If this is the situation, by all means do so, for you ought to make a beginning as soon as you can. It may turn out, however, that you'll choose someone else for the more difficult and deeper. Difficult and deeper revelations. This individual may be entirely outside of AA, for example, your clergyman or your doctor. For some of us, a complete stranger may prove the best bet. As I said, they mentioned it. They really thoroughly cover. And that is a personal decision. There is no fifth step police coming around and saying, you have to pick this person. No, no. That's completely a personal choice, an individual one. So the real tests of the situation are your own willingness to confide and your full confidence in the one with whom you share your first accurate self-survey. Excuse me. Even when you found the person, Even when you found the person, it frequently takes great resolution to approach him or her. No one ought to say that the AA program requires no willpower. Here is one place you may require all you've got. Happily, though, the chances are that you will be in for a very pleasant surprise. When your mission is carefully explained, and it is seen, now they're really speaking of talking to someone other than a sponsor, because you don't have to explain your mission to a sponsor, right? Just say, it's fifth step time. So when your mission is carefully explained and it is seen by the recipient of your confidence, how helpful he can really be, the conversation will soon start easily and will soon, excuse me, the conversation will start easily and will soon become eager. Before long, your listener may well tell a story or two about himself, which will place you even more at ease. Provided you hold back nothing, your sense of relief will mount from minute to minute. The dammed up emotions of years break out of their confinement and miraculously vanish as soon as they are exposed. Again, I have to say that doesn't happen for everyone. And I think I may have shared this at some point, but probably a long time ago. So I was looking for answers for years before I got to the program. I didn't care who you were or what your story was. If I thought you might have my answers, I'd tell you about my story. So I didn't choose a wet one lying in the gutter, but I would have chosen anybody. And so I was so busy blabbing my personal stuff everywhere that my sponsor said to me one time, she said, "Don't tell everybody your heartache." She said, "It's none of their business." And then she did a zip the lip motion with her fingers. You know, I remember we were walking somewhere together when she did that, because I did that. And so that was a self-discipline I had to work on. So for me, telling people my story, there was no big relief in that sense, because I'd already been blabbing it everywhere I went. So to anybody I thought might have some help, and most of them, all of them didn't, or I wouldn't have needed to get to AA. So I want to say that doesn't happen for everybody, but for many folks it does, and that's wonderful. So I'll read that sentence again. As the pain subsides, a healing tranquility takes its place. And when humility and serenity are so combined, something else of great moment is apt to occur. Many in AA, once agnostic or atheistic, tell us that, tells, blah, let me start that sentence again. Many in AA, once agnostic or atheistic, tells us that it was during this stage of step five that he first actually felt the presence of God. And even those who had faith already often became conscious of God as they never were before. This feeling of being at one with God and man, this emerging from isolation through the open and honest sharing of our terrible burden of guilt, brings us to a resting place where we may prepare ourselves for the following steps toward a full and meaningful sobriety. Okay.